is Up Slash and Survive Girls. Welcome back to another edition of the Creepy Real Horror Cast. I'm your host, Meg.
I'm Lunchbox.
And today we keep on trucking with our continuation of the Nightmare on Elm Street series. Today we are covering Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master.
Just another long, nice, comfortable stroll. Just down that red and green, down the red and green road. Oh man, like, I'm just nervous about this one.
Is this where the, so, in The Wizard of Oz, the thing was follow the yellow brick road, but there was a red brick road. Is this where the red brick road leads to terrible slasher movies?
Yeah, this one, this one's just going to be fun.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
So, A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4 was released on August 19th, 1988. Was made for a budget of approximately $13 million. It ended up grossing just under $50 million worldwide. It was written by Brian Helgeland and Jim Wheat and Ken Wheat. But let's be honest, this thing was written on the fly,
yeah,
as only could be done by New Line standards. It was directed by Rennie Harlan. The movie stars Robert Englund as Freddy.
Obviously.
Yeah, no shit, right?
It's like chocolate chip cookies actually have chocolate chips in them.
What? Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger. Rodney Eastman as Joey. Brooke Bundy as Elaine. This is the worst written cast list I have ever seen.
Yeah, I'm looking at IMDb and they have like Wanda Bursley, friend in mourning.
Yeah.
Who the fuck was that?
Well, part of the problem was when if you watch the credits at the end of the film, then all the names are just in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
They aren't in order based on actual screen time.
I want to run through this list. You have Robert Englund, you have Rodney Eastman as Joey, and then you have John Buckman as Coach.
Yeah, so the rest of the actual cast,
it's like friend, Elaine, friend in mourning,
yeah,
pinup girl.
Yeah, so the rest of this goes Danny Hassel as Dan, Andres Jones as Rick, Tuesday Night as Kristen. Jesus wept, this is a terrible cast list.
Yeah. I will say that Tuesday Night, man, she looks great for her age. She's
had a lot of work done.
Yeah.
Ken Sagos as Kincaid, Brooke Thies as Debbie, Lisa Wilcox as Alice, and Linnea Quigley's boobs.
Yep.
In a small yet notable cameo. This is going to be a long episode.
Mm-hmm.
Cameo at the end of the movie. So now that I've gotten all of the pertinence out of the way in the messiest way possible.
Oh, that was like a sloppy Joe.
Whoo, that was a mess.
So real quick though, let's jump into our perts. So where are the good slashers and survivor girls find us?
That's right. we are on social media. Facebook and Instagram at Creepin' It Real, R-E-E-L as in movie reel. If you want to buy the merch, you can either click the link in the Instagram bio, or you can go to creepingitreal.redbubble.com to get a sweet-ass t-shirt. And just an FYI, it is almost back to school season, so there is stationery and office supplies as on Redbubble.
You
so.
Can get whatever the hell you want.
So score a sweet Creepin' It Real notebook at creepingitreal.redbubble.com. That's that part. And then the email, if you want to offer up a movie suggestion or just chat with Lunchbox, is creepingitreal.cm@gmail.com. And Craig is real good about keeping up with all of the mail.
Yeah, my phone is pretty much like attached to me, so I'm pretty good about
it's one of the perks from working from home on a computer all day.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So that is that. It's a shame that I sucked so hard at that opening. So, Dream Master, Nightmare on Elm Street, Part 4. This one was fun for me to watch because I had someone with me who had it as a first-time watch.
Which blew my mind.
Mine too.
Like, I was, like, that's one of those, like I had to, like, double take on that, which is crazy.
Yeah, that one was a surprise for me too, because I sort of assume everybody has seen all the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, but my boyfriend apparently had not. So a couple nights ago when I went to go watch it, I made him watch it with me, and he had a lot of questions whilst we were watching it, and he also pointed out every issue, plot hole, script mistake.
Oh, he's one of those guys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, he's vocal during the movie,
What is happening here? That doesn't make sense. Why is that going on? What the fuck is wrong with that guy's head? Yep, that was that experience.
See, the only person that I've ever had that really encounter with is my mother. When I try to get, to make her watch a movie with me or something like that. And it's more of, she's just not paying attention. She's like, what's happening here? What's going on there? And I'm like, if you just watch the movie, all your questions will be answered.
Our son does it, too, though.
Yeah. Well,
he'll sometimes do that, too, where he just starts talking and he's asking questions and he thinks he's being funny.
I give him the pass because he's eight.
Because he's eight.
When you're a full-grown person, oh, I got to watch this thing. Luckily, you've seen the movie before, so it's not as bad. But
my response to all of that was, oh, wait, it gets better.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. Buckle up. It gets better.
Tighten your pants. And it's going to get bumpy.
And needless to say, I don't think he's terribly excited to watch Dream Child with me tomorrow.
Oh, I can't wait for that. I'm back. Actually, I almost want to do a thing where, depending on how much Nightmare he's actually watched, I would be more intrigued to maybe do a little bonus episode with him to sit down and go, okay, for two people, you and me, that have actually gone balls deep into Freddy.
Oh, all the way deep.
For someone to just come in and be like, oh, you're brand new. I want your perspective on what you just watched as a grown person, first timer.
Yeah.
When we did our retrospective of Halloween, and it's more of just Lunchbox just going, partially through the series. I mean, it's just I would like to hear someone that's completely fresh to it. And
especially a grown man in his 30s.
Yeah. But that's where it's that would actually be kind of fun to do. And I mean, I think that'd be pretty easy to get set up. I mean, something small and we don't have to go, complete play-by-play for each movie. Be like, oh, what was your favorite... What was your favorite Freddy? Which one out of the ones you watched was your favorite? What would be a cool kill?
Maybe I'll record a little blurb after we watch Dream Child just to get a couple of thoughts on it as a grown human who has never seen a Nightmare on Elm Street movie
I almost feel the blurb would be fun, but I think, no, after watching, because we're going into Dream Child, and then, we already did Freddy's Dead, so
thank
we don't have to...
The Lord.
I almost want you to put him through that.
Nope.
Because I want to get that retrospective of how'd you feel about that train wreck?
No, I don't, because that means I have to watch it again, and I don't want to watch it again, and I want nothing to do with it.
And
again.
That would be fun for me, because then I have to get you to go through that since I don't live with you anymore. And
no!
I got to watch Jaws Revenge in a little
Listen,
bit.
Listen, you have made a conscious... So, sidebar real quick. So, we're going to do... we're going to do Dream Master this week, and then next week we're doing The Dream Child. But in honor of Lunchbox's birthday, he's decided... Because we kind of cocked up our dumpster fire month with, my grandfather dying. He wants to... The whole point of doing that entire month was to do Jaws the Revenge and just rip the Band-Aid off and get it over with. However, what we're going to end up doing is we're going to do Dream Child next week, and then we're going to have a break in the series because he wants to do Jaws the Revenge for his birthday for some reason.
Yeah.
Fucking why?
One, it's just going to be fun because even though I absolutely despise that movie, how often do we get to actually shit on a movie? Because you and
Pretty
me...
Pretty often.
No, but you and me, we'll shit on movies, but it's like a genuine dislike as far as the Lair of the White Worm, right? It's like we were going into it thinking it was going to be something good, and all of a sudden it was like, wow, that was actual garbage. And
yeah,
so,
we went in open-minded.
Yeah, but I mean, that was the thing. But now, I've seen Jaws the Revenge multiple times, hated every moment of it, and it's just, it would just be funny to just go in there as a comical shit on instead of it being a genuine...
I have no words.
I don't know. I just thought that would be really fun, and... because we talk about it so much, it's like, why not? It's like, we told everyone, now we're coming back from hiatus, it's like, we gotta give it to them.
Yeah, man, yeah. I have no issue with getting it done and over with. I had just had a confusion.
Yeah.
So once we finish Jaws of Revenge, we'll pick back up with our Nightmare on Elm Street series with Wes Craven's New Nightmare. But for now, we are going to be taking a look at the highest grossing of the original run of this series.
That blows my mind. In a weird... In a one way, it doesn't, but in another way, it does.
Well, it shouldn't, because it was riding that wave of Dream Warriors that came out less than a year before. Dream Warriors had come out at the end of August in 1987. This came out the beginning, middle of August in 1988. So there was less than a year from the release of Dream Warriors to pre-production, production, post-production, and then release of Dream Master. And the thing about Dream Master is, and I don't know if anyone else could tell, but I could, that the script was being written on the fly. They started the production on this movie with basically a couple of ideas sketched out on a diner napkin. And then gave Rennie Harlan the job because he was basically homeless and they wanted to get it done as cheaply as possible.
Yeah, no, and when we say that he was basically homeless, like, he was homeless. Like, he came in to New Line every single day wearing the same exact clothes, and every single day he smelled worse and worse and worse, and they basically gave him the job just so they could say, cool, you don't have to come in anymore, and now you got some money to...
Please go take a shower.
Take care of yourself. But it's just like... And a little part of me was kind of like...
Well, it ended up working out because he went on to do Die Hard 2 and Cliffhanger, and like he's had Deep Blue Sea, so he's had a pretty good filmography.
Yeah, and I was like, and that's where it's like, okay, well, I mean, you got your start somewhere, and I could definitely see where it's that whole thing of, the struggle is real, but man, like, you push through it, cool, like, you got the job, and it's like, and it, even though it's like you're homeless, like, you still put in the work to get that job, and it's like, and I mean, that goes to say, I mean, it's like, for people who lose their jobs, it's like, where's your mindset to better yourself? And again, it's like, yeah, I mean, he did, like, Die Hard 2, that's pretty awesome, like, that's pretty cool, and I am actually a complete mark for Deep Blue Sea. Complete and utter ridiculousness, but it's fucking big-ass Mako sharks, like, how cool is that? Like,
well, Deep Blue Sea is a super fun movie.
Yeah. Samuel L. Jackson dies in it.
And LL Cool J is a parrot.
He has a parrot, and the parrot lives.
So does LL Cool J.
I know, it's awesome.
The brother survived the horror movie.
I know, it's pretty cool.
So, this one was interesting because this is the only one you can point to as being an actual continuation of the film before it. All of the rest of them were either loosely tied to the film before it, like Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2 kind of just mentions Nancy. Jesse lives in the same house that Nancy used to live in.
He finds Nancy's diary that supposedly she wrote.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Something about Glenn's taut tummy.
Glenn. It's so weird. Like, that's not Nancy.
And then Dream... Well, no, Dream Child. So there's, like, the little trilogy there.
Yeah.
The Dream Warriors, Dream Master, Dream Child. The, Alice Johnson series there. I don't know what to call it. But this one had the continuation of bringing in the last three surviving Dream Warriors and then promptly killing them off within the first, I don't know, 20 minutes of the movie. Just boom, 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 done.
I absolutely hated that. Like, that was something that I was like, man, for you guys to sit there and go, okay, like, especially Kincaid. I was like, to sit there and go, we're going to kill Kincaid off right away.
At the beginning?
As the first kill of the movie. I was like, man, that sucks. Like, that's just, like, for me, it's like, if I wasn't that curious, like, or like the first, like, because I remember watching Dream Warriors being all about Kincaid, you know, just...
I think universally, Kincaid's pretty much generally liked by everybody who's a fan of the series.
I feel like Kincaid is probably, like, probably the most favorite character out of all of, like, the Freddy Nightmare on Elm Street films.
Yeah, he's pretty high up there.
He's
definitely one of the most likable.
Yeah, and so it's like when you kill him off like that early, it's just, it takes the wind out of your sails, because then you're just like, okay, well, what the fuck? What else are we gonna get into? It's like, who am I gonna latch onto that's gonna have that much charisma, and it's just...
Well, it certainly wasn't Kristen, because Tuesday night had all of the depth and charisma of a rain puddle.
Yeah, and that's where it's like... and also, it's like, with changing it up for Kristen, it was just... It also took you out of it, because you're like... They had to explain who she was in the film, and it's just, it's so awkward. Well, because
she was nothing like the version that Patricia Arquette played.
At all. Not even close.
The only thing they had in common was a name. If she had bothered to try to keep her personality or anything similar to the way she was in Dream Warriors, you might have been able to kind of go with the fact that it was a different actress.
I did like that they kept Joey... basically the same. He just kind of got over the not talking thing.
Yeah, he wasn't a mute anymore, but he was still perfectly girl crazy, which is how he died.
I was like, that's great. I mean, I was like, he did that in Dream Warriors, and then it carried over into, Dream Master. So, but again, it's like, I would have rather them go through the whole thing with Kristen again, and then kind of bring in Alice, like, towards the middle of the movie to do the passing of the torch. But it's like, oh, no, we're just going to go... And also, Freddy just offs them so quickly. He doesn't even, like, savor the flavor. He just goes, nope, done. And I mean, and granted, like, I think I've said this before, where it's like, with the villains, it's you get that, like, James Bond kind of villain,
The mustache twirly.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm going to tell you my entire plan, and I'm just going to milk this for all, and then to give you that... little bit of a chance to get away, and then
all the exposition.
Yeah, and then then it just takes forever, and it's just like, and then all of a sudden, then they try to do the deed. So I mean, I appreciate what Freddy did, where it's like, oh, I'm gonna play a little bit and then just kill you. But at the same time, it's just like, you killed the characters everyone wanted to see. It's like nobody else in the rest of the group with
if you look at
the chuckleheads, you gave a shit about.
If you look at Dream Warriors, they brought Nancy back. For that one, and she made it all the way up through to the end of the movie.
Yeah,
and then they killed her off. And if you don't have to, you didn't have to do that with all three, but you could have done it with one of them. I don't know, eeny, meeny, miny, mo. I would have definitely killed Joey off pretty early. He was fairly inconsequential even to Dream Warriors. So flip a coin on either Kristen or Kincaid to drag them out to at least halfway through the film.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it's like, why even put them in the film? Because you are doing a big injustice to...
The only reason why they were even in the film to begin with is just to make that transition to the new cast that much simpler. That's all that it was, is to find a quote-unquote smooth... I would dare say it wasn't the smoothest it could have been, but the smoother transition to... the new Elm Street kids, and try to tie it in and try to make it make... Like, the effort was there, and I appreciate that the effort was there to try to make it make sense. It could have probably been executed a little bit better, but they didn't go into this movie with a plan. They were just rushing production to try to make money.
And that was the thing, was like, if I had to do my armchair writing for this film, I would have at least kept Kincaid and maybe Joey as helpers to Alice, and because like when she gets
that wouldn't have made sense, because Kristen would have been the one who needed to stay alive the most, because she had the power to drag people into the dreams. Alice never would have been able to get in there.
No, but that's what I mean, is like with when Kristen dies, like if you're gonna do the torch passing, which they did in a very weird way that we'll get into later, but like after they do the ability passing, it's like if you had Kincaid there to be the muscle, and then, because he went through it before, he could kind of be the,
I could kind of see that, except for the fact that Joey and Kincaid weren't friends with Alice.
No, and that's the problem, is like they were a part of the school, like the school group, but they were in like different cliques.
They were in different cliques. It's basically what it was. So Kristen was friends with Joey and Kincaid from her asylum days, and then because she was dating Rick, she was friends with Alice and that whole crew as well.
But, like, well, that was the thing, was, like, even Rick was just, like, he was separate from Kristen and all them, too, because he was, like, kind of talking shit about Kristen, like, behind her back.
No, he wasn't.
Like, he kind of made, like, a smirky comment about her being weird or something like that. And then it was just kind of like that was it. But you never saw Kristen's clique really engage with Alice's clique.
They didn't engage at all.
At all. And so that's why I was like, okay, well, why not bring them all together? And it's like, you know, have them kind of associate in some fashion. Because now it's like when they come in and Rick's like, oh, like, Kincaid and Joey are dead. This is like, who's that? We like, okay, like, why do we care?
Yeah, Rick would know who they were because he was dating Kristen. But, I mean, outside of maybe in passing, I don't see how Alice and Sheila and Debbie would have known really Joey or Kincaid on more than a that's their names kind of level. That's about it.
It's kind of like when you're like,
they're not invested.
Yeah, I mean, I remember being in high school and somebody came in, they're like, oh man, like, you know, Mark got in a car accident, and I'm like, oh man, that sucks. Who's Mark? Like, it didn't register. Like, I didn't have the care factor. I mean, it's like, I mean, it sucks. I feel terrible that, you know, he got in a car wreck.
But outside of just basic human empathy for it, like, there's no connection there. There's no reason for you to really give a shit. It's like, wow, that's a shame. I hope he's okay. It's not going to affect you emotionally in any way.
Yeah, and that's why it's like, I almost feel like if, you know, Kincaid and or Joey were the guys that were like, They had some type of interaction as the movie went on, as Freddy's getting stronger, you know. Like, that whole opening scene with Kincaid and the car graveyard, you know, the junkyard scene, that was awesome. I love that.
Yeah, except for
bits and parts of it.
Except for, how are we going to resurrect Freddy? A dog pisses on him? Why a dog pisses fire? Like, if you've watched the Nightmare on Elm Street Never Sleep Again doc, like, Rachel Talalay was kind of making fun of Rennie Harlan's accent, and she's like, well, are we going to resurrect Freddy this time? And she pretended to be Rennie Harlan and did her impression of him. But I'm like, of all of the ways to resurrect him, like, I get they're trying to go for the hellhound symbolism and that sort of deal, but he got peed on. And that's what brought him back?
By a dog named Jason.
Right. Very nice, guys. Cute.
Yeah.
Cute.
So, that whole little bit was kind of like, all right, that's not... I was like, that's kind of dumb. Like, it's not... And I don't know if they were just trying to do it as, like, a 15-year-old boy, you know, like, joke type of thing. But at the same time, I was like, okay, that's kind of dumb.
Sure, we'll go with that. But I have a better explanation.
Everything after that was bitching. Like, that whole scene of Freddy coming back together, making it very much like from, like, Hellraiser, mm-hmm. which is what I think
Hellraiser was the year before.
So I was like, that was a really cool transition. I love stuff like that.
Well, the way that was done was they ran it backwards. They melted They melted him down. They had the cast of Robert Englund, and it was covered in wax, and they had a wax sculpture.
And it looked fantastic.
So they melted it down and then played it back in reverse to make it look like he was coming back.
And then when they do the whole bit where Kincaid looks up at the sky and he's screaming, Freddy's back, and then the camera pans out and he's just on a globe. And it's just this car graveyard. I was like, that's fucking cool.
There were some interesting visuals in this movie for sure. I think the special effects definitely had some things going for them.
There were some wins.
But there's no real substance to the movie.
No, but back to my point, when we got into the Kincaid thing and he's screaming that, you know, Freddy's back, I would have kept Kincaid alive and maybe just kind of scared him awake again. So that way he does that thing that every Elm Street kid does where he's like, shit, Freddy's back. Like, because they just went through the whole thing where... Kristen went through the house, brought Kincaid and Joey in. They're just like, listen, girl, you need to calm your shit down.
Before he bring him back by accident.
Yeah, like that whole thing. I would have said, it's like, okay, use Kincaid as the vessel to get the group back in, get them in with the Alice's group, and then maybe kill him off a little bit later in the movie.
I think there, you might have something there where he's the messenger.
Yeah.
He saw Freddy come back. Freddy sends him back out into the world to let everybody know.
Because I love Crazy Kincaid. Like, when he's, like, starts popping off, like, I'm all about it. Like, he, because he starts getting ghetto, and it's just like, that's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, he's pretty funny.
I ain't going back in that box. Fuck you,
motherfucker. I mean, of the three, I think Joey was the most disposable.
Yes.
But, yeah, I think that could have been handled a little bit better. This movie seems very disjointed because of that, because you have the last three of the Elm Street children from the asylum, and the relationships as presented are a bit janky, so it doesn't really, the transitions don't hang together very well. That's why I use smooth in air quotes, because it's not at all.
Yeah.
I did kind of enjoy the Alice character. I kind of like watching that arc where she started off as being kind of meek and mousy, and then by the end of it, she's basically Ripley.
I could see what they were going with it, and it felt very, for me, not a fan. Like,
I didn't say they did it well. I said I liked the arc.
No, the arc was fine, but it was just, it was very goofy.
Mm.
And that was something where it's just, there's just so much with Alice, and it's just like, I don't know if I would rather her to be the meek girl or the badass. And it's like, I can't tell, because I don't know if the actress was the right person for that badass role.
I think Lisa Wilcox did it fine. I think part of the problem was the dialogue.
Yeah.
The dialogue, woof, in this movie.
When you go back to, like, Sarah Connor, and you got, like, so when you get her from Terminator 1 being the, you know, just the weak, just, you know, just the crippling person where it's like, oh, she needs to be saved. Going to Terminator 2 where she's like, I'm fucking up everybody. And it's like, that is my type of woman.
And that's
woman.
What
like,
they were basically doing with Alice, was trying to do a version of that.
Yeah. But in one movie is very, very tough to do. And make it, like, really work. It's just,
No, it's 100% doable. Just, it takes a better director and a better writer.
Yeah. I mean,
and a better, apparently, more organization, because that's not what this movie had.
I mean, like, when you got, like, Sigourney Weaver with Ripley and stuff like that, like, she was already kind of a badass. It just, like, she wasn't a weak person. Like, she was just like, no, I gotta fucking deal with these space truck drivers, and I'm not putting up with anybody's shit. And, like, oh, shit, there's aliens. You know, it's like, you know, that's the thing. But, like, the Sarah Connor, I felt, was a really good example of, like, I think, as we were saying, like, what they were trying to do with Alice. I just, the thing about this movie is I hate how on the nose everything is in this movie. Everything.
There's a lot of hand-holding. There's no trusting of the audience. A lot of it's very heavy-handed with some of the foreshadow. I think I watched, was it Dead Meat? I can't remember if it was Dead Meat or Cody Leach on YouTube. I want to say it was James H. Neese. I think it was Dead Meat.
We watch all of it.
Well, he was talking about how they basically create these one-dimensional characters with two character traits, and that's all they have going for them.
Like, yeah.
Debbie works out and hates bugs, and Sheila is a nerd with asthma. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of, there's Handsome Dan. And just, like, there's no
football player jock. Like,
yeah, there's no real there's no real dimensions to any of these characters, because they're all just meant to be Freddy fodder. So it's real hard to like any of them. And yes, they gave Alice a decent arc, but she wasn't really surrounded by anybody that was too terribly, you didn't get really attached to anybody. I mean, I liked Sheila a little bit. I thought she was rather, you know, the charming, cute little nerd girl. But I don't know. Like, there wasn't anything attractive really about anybody.
And I don't know if they were meaning to do this, or if it just kind of just, as like a studio, it just happened to be this. It's the fucking Breakfast Club. Like, that's, like, they put all these misfits that would never have interacted with each other, and they put them all together.
Oh yeah, Debbie and Sheila were like BFF. Like they were super close. But you have the pop, the cool girl, and the nerdy little cute little nerdy girl with asthma. Like they're buddies.
Like hardcore buddies.
Yeah, they're
like,
real close.
We're staying together on the weekends. Debbie's gonna go to the diner to see her friend at work, and it's like that doesn't. Again, it's one of those. Like, I'm not saying like it couldn't happen, but in movies when you do stuff like that, it feels so forced.
It does feel super weird. It's very difficult to get attached to it because you're kind of left scratching your head going, would these people ever really hang out in real life? I mean, maybe, but in the 80s, not so much.
I mean, and like when they're when the two of them are talking out in the parking lot, she pulls up on her like smoky scooter and she's like, she starts like, she's doing her asthma thing, and she's pushing her glasses up, and she's, you know, getting her textbooks and getting her bags, and then all of a sudden her friend comes up, and she's got the big, poofy 80s hair, and all she's doing is talking about working out, and I'm like, clearly, you two do not hang out, because you guys are doing something completely different
mm-hmm.
on the weekends, and whatever it is, it's like, there's nothing where it's like, Debbie can sit there and go, oh, hey, like, I built this robot today. And then she's, like, she's going to be like, oh, okay. I don't know anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
You mean unless, Sheila.
Sheila, yeah. But I mean,
Debbie was the workout girl.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, Debbie was a gym rat.
You know what I'm talking about. Like, but that's the thing. It's like, but for the two of them to sit there and go, oh, I mean, unless they have been best friends since birth, you know, or, like, elementary school, whatever you want to say. Like, that would be the only way that that dynamic would work. But most of the time, like, when it goes to high school, and you get, like, you get those movies where it's, you get the nerd. And the, yeah. And they start to split, and then you're just like, like,
so cool now, Brewster.
Yeah, what was the, or in, like, the new Jumanji with Fridge?
Mm.
And it's like, it's like, it's exactly like that. Like, Fridge becomes the popular jock, and then, you know, the, what's his name? I forget him. He's from, oh, shit, I forget the
one
movie.
The one who was in Hereditary, right?
Hereditary, yeah. Like, so it's like, and he is just playing Street Fighter on the weekends and doing his homework, and it's like, yeah, clearly it's like those type of movies happen all the fucking time. So it's like that relationship was just very, very awkward. So, but I mean, like, but really the dynamic between all of them were, because I never really saw Rick interacting with the, you know, with the nerd and the popular workout.
No, but
chick,
he was friends with Dan somehow. Dan was on the football team.
Yeah. And then, but Dan never interacted with Rick, but he obviously had some type of connection with them.
They were friends because he showed up, Dan showed up at the diner to see Alice, say, hey, where's your brother?
Yeah.
So, like, it's implied that they're friends, but they don't have enough friendly interaction on screen to really, it's more of a tell, not show.
But then Dan also has no idea who Alice is, and they've never interacted, even
well,
though
he knows who Alice is, but he never bothered with her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's this, the thing in the diner where he's like, oh, hey, oh, by the way, I'm Dan. Like, and then walks away. I was like, okay, so, like that.
You're friends with her brother, but you don't really know her?
Yeah. It's like, how have you never interacted with her at all? I mean, I, like, my sister's friends, I mean, I remember, like, I would go play hockey constantly. I would come home and I would see them just hanging out in the living room, and I would at least say hi to them or, like, at, you know their names. And then I would just go about my business. But it was just the whole thing of, like, it was just a weird interaction where it's like, it's like, was he actually friends, or did he just buy pot off of Rick at one point? Or
I don't,
like,
know.
You know, it's like, it's just,
I believe that interaction before I would believe they were actually buddies.
Yeah. Like, Rick seems like the type of dude that would secretly be selling weed on the sly, like.
Probably.
Yeah, that, well, that or some sweet kung fu moves.
No, those are all fucking terrible. Yeah, and they tried to add some depth to the Johnsons. I'm guessing they were twins, or maybe Rick was a year ahead of Alice. I don't know how the sibling dynamic there age-wise was, but they tried to add a layer of depth to them by having the abusive alcoholic father, kinda, but all it really did was kind of help show why Alice was so reserved, but it didn't do anything really to Rick's personality, except he just became very avoidant.
Yeah.
That was about it, because he jumped out the window instead of going out the front door just to avoid having a morning interaction with his dad.
Like, who still had a morning interaction with his dad.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful interaction, too, because it was hilarious, where he goes and gives his dad a big old smooch and, like, it has this funny one-liner. I'm like, okay, that scene I actually like.
I could buy that.
I like that.
But, yeah, it was just the relationships were a garbled mess in this one. I did believe that Alice and Debbie and Sheila were all friends. Like, I really do believe that the three of them, because that was the only group dynamic they sort of kind of got right. Abort. Let me amend that. Alice and Debbie were friends, and then Alice and Kristen being friends, I could believe both of those relationship dynamics.
Yeah. It kind of felt like Laurie Strode and her group of friends, where it's like Laurie's the kind of like the bookworm goody two shoes, but like she still had like
Yeah. It was very much like an Annie and Linda kind of thing with her. I don't know. Like, and then to have towards the end of the movie where the last three standing are Debbie, Dan, and Alice before the final showdown, I'm just sort of like, how did we end up in that combination? That's so fucking... And I've seen this movie a bunch, but this time having to really pay attention to it to do it for the podcast, I was just like, how the fuck did we end up here? Yeah. Really? Those three? And it was just... It was weird.
Yeah. And a lot of it was just literal cannon fodder. Like, it was just... They were just there just to pad everything. I mean, just much like the Kincaid and Joey and Kristen.
I mean, they tried to flesh out the cannon fodder a little bit. Yeah. But they weren't nearly as engaging as the Dream Warriors
kids. It was just mainly to get Freddy some kooky one-liner time.
Like, how sweet... Fresh meat.
God, I hated the way that they made Freddy talk in this movie.
So if you like your Freddy silly, this is definitely the movie for you.
Yeah. It's really, really bad dad jokes is what it feels like.
Work your little meatball.
Yeah. Oh. Like stuff like that like drives me crazy. But like the one thing that I kind of wanted to touch on, going back to the drunk dad for Alice and Rick. That is probably the most just... They really missed the mark. Because they had something golden with that, and they missed.
I mean, as somebody who has drunk parents, I can tell you right now that that's not at all how he would be acting.
They really missed the mark with using the dad in that situation with Rick. Because when they couldn't figure out what the hell to do for his death scene, why wouldn't they use that? Because there was that really kind of awkward moment when Rick's dad comes home late. They were supposed to have dinner together, and he was already drunk. He was, coming home from work. Rick was in his dojo working out, and he comes in, and the dad kind of gives him this, like... What are you looking at? Like you need something? And you could just tell, like, Rick was just... He wanted to have some type of connection with his dad, or actually just have a positive connection. And they could have really used that, where Freddy shows up as his dad and starts to be really belligerent. And
I mean, they did it in later installments.
Yeah.
They did it in Freddy's Dead with... what's her name? Leslie Dean's character.
Yeah.
Her dad. Why not? Why wouldn't it work there?
So, I mean, I thought that was just a missed opportunity for sure. And especially after Alice was able to kind of do the dream jumping bit, and she could have been a part of that, because that would have been an extra connection for her.
Yeah, I think.
And they missed it.
I think that's a good idea. But I also kind of think with the tone of the movie as it currently stands, that scene would have been a whole lot darker, and it wouldn't have fit with the overall tone of the movie.
Yeah. Well, and it's more of like kind of leading up with Rick's dad being just, I mean, you could kind of do in that amped up, like, maybe a little bit more of a, not a cartoonish would be the word, but like just that, like, just the style that they were going with, you could really amp it up, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's Freddy, and then it flips over to that. Mm. I mean, anything would have been better than Kung Fu with an invisible fighter.
He was basically shadowboxing.
Yeah, shadowboxing in a room full of bedsheets. and then a magical glove killing it. Like, anything would have been better than that. So, it's just the having that emotional tie, bringing the whole thing with the dad around. Because, like, in it was in Dream Child, they kind of fixed that to a degree.
Yeah.
So, it's just, I think that would have been good for, like, a character arc. As far as that. And,
well, in Dream Child, we'll get to that next week, but he sobered up, which was kind of nice.
So, but I mean, character arc for Rick and Atlas. And then going into that very awkward, like, hello, babe! It's like...
The big bobber thing that he did.
Yeah, and just where Rick's explaining to her, like, you gotta keep going, you gotta do this, and then he gets back in the casket, and it's like, okay, like...
That was a weird one, because he goes up to her... What did he say to her? He's having this sort of deep interaction... And he's like, he said he was doing it to, he wasn't really dead. This was like a prank on Freddy. And he was trying to have a sort of deep conversation with his sister. And she essentially, to sum up and paraphrase, she tells him, no, this isn't real. And so he backs up back into the casket and ashes to ashes, dust to dust. I'm just like, did we need to do this?
Yeah, it was just a very... I don't know if it was just more for her just to go, okay, I gotta keep going or I gotta fight, and it's just, but it didn't seem like it was a real, like, hoorah pep talk. It was more of like, hey, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. It's fine. It's just, it kind of was a weird, like, slowdown point for the movie. Mm-hmm. Until it gets into the big epic nitty gritty of it. But that was the thing, is I feel like they could have really... They could have used something a little bit more with the dad, and that would have given a little bit more character art for me personally. I think that would be pretty good.
I mean, they didn't do anything really. The focus was on Alice, and Alice was the only one that had any sort of substance to her. But even then, when we're going through the final montage of her gearing up for battle, it was so goofy. Yeah. And it was so silly, and I'm sitting there watching this thing, and I didn't remember how silly it was. I kind of put that out of my brain, and I'm watching it, and I'm cringing the whole time.
Yep.
She's pulling the pictures off the mirror. She's tying Rick's bandana around her fist. Like, she's wrapping shit around her ankles. I'm like, I don't know why we're doing this. And then when it's all said and done, and she's, like, all painted up and armored up for battle, like, she just knocks all this stuff off of her vanity and is looking in the mirror and she goes, fucking A. And I'm like, why was this a thing? Why are we watching this?
I was laughing to myself because I had this moment where I was like, okay, this the music is like your standard 80s, you know, montage, you know, fight battle scene music. And I was like, what would be better in this, like, if you had to put this in, like, a new, I was like, a little part of me, I think it'd be funny to do, like, Lizzo's, like, I do my head toss, check my nails. Like, just, I don't know why that was, like, it made me laugh so hard.
Like, I don't know. I mean, it would have been funny to have that in, like, a Rocky-style montage, like they were doing.
Yeah.
Actually, that'd be fucking hilarious.
I feel good as hell.
That'd be really funny. I don't know. I just... There were so many moments where I found myself, like, sucking wind through my teeth and cringing.
But, so, I thought of the Lizzo thing, but the one thing that, song that would make that even better, because, yes, that whole scene is very cringy, but it would make more sense, is, like, if they did the montage music from Basketball. It's like if they had Trey Parker doing like the
you can just, do it with a montage.
I was like,
and that was from Team America.
Yeah, or Team America. Well, no, there was one in basketball too.
Oh, okay,
that was, like,
no,
same
I always
thing.
Think of the one from Team America.
Yeah, or it's,
Rocky. Even Rocky did it with a montage.
Like hearing that over the Nightmare on Elm Street, it's like that would just make everything just so much better. Because it's still goofy enough, but it's just like,
oh yeah,
oh we're serious. No, it's just so good. So, but yeah, that whole thing was just the fucking A. It's like, all right, no,
yeah,
and the whole thing back to the dad thing, all of the little like daydreaming that Alice did you find that very weird too?
I mean, none of this was knotted together particularly well. Yeah,
granted,
and
yes.
That was kind of trying to hint at the idea that Alice is the Dream Master. And at two points in the movie, they talk about this Dream Master poem.
It's not really a poem. Like.
No, it's like, it was mentioned at the beginning. Alice, I think, is talking to Debbie about it. And she goes, my mom told me this poem about a Dream Master. And then we have this huge stretch of movie where the Dream Master idea is never mentioned. Not at all. Like, I guess that was supposed to plant the seed that Alice is going to end up being the Dream Master. And then at the end of it, when they're doing the final battle in the Dream Church, and she finds the broken hunk of stained glass, and she remembers the Dream Master poem, and it starts off as, like, the bedtime prayer, now I lay me down to sleep, and I'm just like, what?
Yeah, what? I was like, that's not the... But, okay.
And then it goes into talking about how if you show the devil his reflection, the devil will die. And I'm like, okay, he's Narcissus now?
Yeah. Like, that was just very, very awkward. But, like, all of her little daydream thing, and I was like, so it makes her the Dream Master because she could daydream? I was like, fuck, I do that shit all the time. I still do it. I used to daydream and I used to, like, imagine people without noses.
I remember that.
Yeah, like, that's an actual thing. I have a whole bunch of artwork because of that thought. Yeah, it's fucking weird. But, like, that old thing with her just being, like, a complete badass in her little daydreams or, like, facing off with her dad and all that. I was like... I don't know if I would want more of that to kind of get more of that personality or the character arc, because she was so dainty and quiet, and then where she's like, oh, she actually has a backbone, like, in her thought process, but it's just, I think going against Freddy would have, I don't know if it would have made it a little bit better if she did that, but at the same time, it's like, did it actually serve a purpose? And it's, I don't know. But as far as, like, everything else, like, was there any... Like, what was your favorite kill in the movie?
Oh, the Debbie kill.
Oh, okay. Clearly, it's like Slayer's Rain in Blood. Like,
Yeah. Well, it was the one that was the most creative.
Yep.
It was the one that had the most effort put in. I think most of the movie special effects was this one they switched over to Howard Berger.
I think
this is the one where they switched over to Howard Berger from Kevin Yeager. But the Roach effect was done by Screaming Mad George, and it was excellent. Like, yeah, it was real heavy-handed foreshadow at the beginning where Debbie finds the bug on her piece of dried fruit. But I think the way that it was done where she... Her arms get bent and broken, and then you see the... spindly arms of the Roach come out, and her room morphs into a Roach motel, and like her skin peels off. Like, that was the one they clearly focused a chunk of the budget on, so and a whole lot of effort, so naturally that's the one that came out the best. It was the most effective of all of them, but obviously they wasted a little too much money on it, because afterwards they went to film Rick's death and they were like, we out of money.
Yeah, but that's where that scene, it was really funny. So as I'm watching the movie for the podcast, our five-year-old daughter, if I could talk, she comes out and she's like, oh, like, I can't sleep, like, can I watch the movie with you? And a little part of me was like, you know what, I think you could, I think this would be okay. Like, and I, it was more because, like, everything at the beginning of the movie is very tame. He, even, like, Freddy, like, I mean, our daughters watch other stuff with, like, her son, you know, like, Chucky and everything like that, and they stab people. I mean, it's, we try to make sure that's, like, we do our show our kids stuff that it's, like, okay, it's, they know it's fake and it's not, super gory and stuff like that. So, it's tame to a degree. So I was like, all right, I think you should be all right. But then all of a sudden that scene starts to come up. And I had to tell my daughter, I was like, all right, if you're still up, I was like, I probably wouldn't watch this part. I was like, this one's going to be a little bit rough for you. And so she, like, you know, she actually, like, covered her eyes and stuff like that. But then it was, like, right after the whole, like, the arms breaking point, I was like, okay, I think you'd be all right. Because then, like, you could see, like, the cockroach, you know, pinchers and stuff like that, and it's like, so I was like, oh, it's like, so she's got bug arms now, and I was like, okay, so now, like, you're fine. It was just the whole act of the breaking, like, that was,
I mean, it's icky.
Yeah, so, but then, like, when she actually turns into the cockroach, she's like, oh my god, that's gross. I was
like, and then she gets squished.
Yeah, now, I don't know if there, if that was just, like, a quick way to end Debbie with the, you know, crushing the Roach Motel. Because he gives, like, doesn't he do, he does the one-liner that they check in, but they
you
don't
can,
check out.
Yeah, you can check in, but you can't check out.
Do you think there would be another way that they could get rid of, like, to destroy, like, maybe, like, do it, like, in the incinerator, like, in the furnace or something like that? Like,
yeah, probably, but I think that worked for what it is. It's just really hard to squish a roach that way, but it was still effective and got the point across.
Yeah.
And I think that was very apropos for Debbie, because they used that sort of irony, because she was afraid of bugs, turned into a bug, was squished like a bug. So that ended up working out really well for her in terms of all of that. I did like that one the best. The Joey's was kind of fun, too, because he went out the way you would imagine Joey would go out at the hands of a beautiful woman.
And I got questions about that. It's like,
how's this for a wet dream? Fuck you, Freddy. Fuck you.
Like, that whole thing of, like, getting Joey and putting him in the waterbed, killing him, and then his mom finding him inside of the waterbed. First off, I don't know if, I mean, I remember my dad owning a waterbed, like, when I was, like, really, really young.
Yeah.
But the waterbed was, like, solid blue. It was, like, this blue rubber. But I personally have never seen a clear waterbed.
They weren't all blue. My parents had one that was probably partially see-through. It was not completely clear, but there was some that were relatively transparent, so they just went ahead for the gag and did that. I find it interesting that they managed to pull him in the dream, and then, you know, cause you die in your dream, you die for real, right? Yeah. But everybody else who died in their dreams were just left wherever they were with whatever the injury was. So I don't know, I thought it was a cool look. You can't think about it too hard. You're like, well, how the fuck did he,
yeah, I mean, it was just
in there.
It was just really funny just seeing, like, where the supermodel on the poster leaps off of the poster, and then she's inside the bed, and all of a sudden Freddy pops out. So I was like, I like Joey's death. Like, that was actually fun, even though I felt like it probably shouldn't have happened until maybe later in the movie. But everything else was, like, as we were saying, it's just so on the nose.
And it was hokey.
Everything.
It was really, Kristen's death was super hokey. Rick's death was super hokey.
Kristen's death was absolutely ridiculous, where it's just, like, it was such a quick, like,
and again, the dialogue.
Yikes. Use my power. It's like, oh, so you got that? Like, it's like, okay.
It goes, bring somebody in. No!
And then I got to thinking, I was like, if she just died and didn't give her ability up, the movie would just ended. Freddie wouldn't have had the opportunity to get more people. quote unquote. I mean, he probably could have figured out a way, but it's just like, you just kind of set, like, so Kristen fucked up by trying to do something good, and it's just like,
I mean, none of that made sense, because she told Kruger, no, I'm not going to pull somebody else into the dream, and then immediately pull somebody else into the dream.
Yeah.
Which is it, lady?
How sweet. Fresh meat.
Oh, God. I just, and every time I think of the dialogue, my eyes start to cross.
Yeah.
It's just so bad. It was so bad. That was probably the cringiest part of the whole thing. Like, you can kind of skate past the plot issues. You can kind of skate past some of the pacing issues. But everybody in this movie had to talk at some point or another. And it was all bad. Not terribly believable. And it was just, this movie just felt like a bunch of scenes that were sewn together without a real cohesive skeleton running through it.
Yeah. And like the stuff with Debbie, where she's in class and they're doing the test and
Sheila.
I keep getting both, the nerd. I keep getting them mixed up, and I'm sorry. I'm an idiot. But like, that was the thing, is like, so the nerd, where she's in class and they're doing the test, and this is our Bob Shea cameo, when he's actually talking about the Dream Master, and I was like, oh, how about that? Like, way to
phone that in.
And even his performance, like, I know he's supposed to be the dreary, like, you know, boring teacher, but at the same time, it's like, wow, like,
oh yeah, because it's because his droning on and on and on in Ben Stein fashion was supposed to be what lulled Alice to sleep, and God, then
I miss Ben Stein.
She pulled Sheila into her dream, but Sheila wasn't asleep. Like, that's why it doesn't make any sense. She was pulling, Debbie wasn't asleep either, and she pulled Debbie into the dream. But if we go back to the way Kristen's power works in Dream Warriors, everybody had to be asleep. At the beginning of Dream Master, everybody had to be asleep.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, you didn't have to be asleep. And you could be fully awake and having this shit happen to you.
Yeah. And that was the thing, too, was that when they, at the end of Dream Warriors, where they, you know, finally buried Freddy, and it, quote-unquote, stopped him, which was probably the best way that you could think of to really stop Freddy. It's like, okay, well, if because there's no real clear-cut way to actually stop him, because he's in your
dream. Sure, the holy water, hallowed ground thing.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, if you had to, like, really, you know, sit down and try to figure out how you would actually end this villain, that would be one way that I could see being justifiable. But then when all of a sudden Kincaid, he just pops into his own dream, and all of a sudden, oh shit, Freddy's here, and they just bring him back just for fuck all. And it's just like, and he does that whole, like, I am eternal. It's
but he
just
pulled his dog into his dream. How?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, his dog might have been sleeping. Like, he just dreamed about Jason, and Jason showed up. Was this supposed to be, like, a Kristen Parker power, where he pulled his sleeping dog into his dream?
Or Freddy just happened to just use his dog because of, for whatever reason.
I'm guessing he just had a dream about his dog. We all dream about our pets sometimes, but it just, the, based on the rules as we knew them, it didn't make sense, and it didn't really work. I mean, this movie hurts my head.
Yeah, it's just like, really trying to think about how it's like, okay, Freddy just shows back up just because, oh, we just got to put him back in, and it's like, there's no rhyme or reason as to why. They're just like, oh, I'm eternal, you just can't kill me. Well, fuck all. Like, what the hell? Like, what was the whole point of Dream Warriors, where they're like, oh, they went through all that work just for him just to go, eh, like, fuck you. It's like, why did he even stop? If that was the case where he can't die and he's eternal, then why did he go through the whole, you know, light, you know, spinorama thing at the end of Dream Warriors? And,
I don't know.
Yeah, and then, like, then the whole thing with, at the end, where it's like, yeah, it's like you have Kristen bringing in, like, they still followed the rule where Kristen would bring in Kincaid and Joey, but then when it got to Alice, it was just like, it was just whenever
it was a free-for-all.
Whenever Alice fell asleep, she was able to get those people. And it's like, and that was just, because
Sheila
very
was 100% awake in class.
Yeah.
And that was, everybody was 100% awake when she would bring them in. So yeah, it was really fucking weird.
Now, I will, granted, again, that was another one where I thought the special effects was pretty cool. We get the creepy, awful one-liner from Freddy. It's like, "Want to suck face?" And
Sheila had no idea who he was. She, at that point, had never heard of him. I don't think she even had any interactions with Kristen, because Kristen was the one who was the most paranoid about him coming back. It hurts my brain.
But I love the effect where he, you know, goes to like give her a big smooch and then starts to suck and then literally deflates her. And like, I thought that was really cool. That looked really good.
Yeah, and honestly, probably one of the best things about this movie for me is at the end is one of the more satisfying Freddy deaths. Having, because we have, this is the one where we learn about him being powered by the souls of the kids that he kills. To have them fight back from the inside out, it was actually a really satisfying way to do this, to get the job done and kill Freddy, I thought.
Oh, and I agree with the actual look of it was fucking top notch. I absolutely, like, where all the arms are coming out of him, I was like, if anybody's actually seen a lot of my artwork, it's like, that's the shit I do. Like, it's just, it's weird.
Sure, so it appeals to you on a pretty visceral level.
Oh, yeah.
But it was actually a really satisfying way for him to go, because it's the souls of the children he's killed before are fighting back from the inside. And you could argue that there's a little bit of some spiritual symbolism in there, too. But I think this is probably... it's more satisfying. This was more satisfying a death than in the first movie. It was definitely a more satisfying death than in the third movie. Well, especially the first movie. I don't believe in you anymore.
Yeah, that like, yeah, again, that's like really. But the thing with like her remembering the Dream Master motto, and then all of a sudden, like all the kids. The choir kids up at the top, like the Elm Street kids, and then she does the thing with the mirror, but then like I was like, okay, that is so eye rolly, and it's super hard and just cringy, mm-hmm. But then all of a sudden they like make it better, because then it's like you go into Freddy's eye and then you're going inside him and you can see just all the bodies and just that intertwined, like, it looks so badass.
Yeah, it was
so
a cool visual, for sure.
And then you get the arms, like, coming out. And, like, I think my favorite arm out of Freddy is the one out of the back of his head.
Oh, that pulls him and pins him to the wall?
Yeah, because one thing that I thought was really cool was, like, it latches on, which is really, like, an awesome animatronic. But then when Robert Englund's trying to, like, pull away, and he gets snapped back, I'm like, damn, like, that's actually really, that's really neat. That's really cool, like.
Grab a strong hand.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, for that prosthetic to be that stretchy, I was like, damn, like, that's really cool.
No, and there was a lot went into that, and it was really well done. Like I said, this is just a compilation of scenes that are barely hung together just because of the characters because the characters that are in them.
Yeah.
That's it. Otherwise, this is barely a coherent movie.
And I gotta give it, like, so right after Alice walks out of the chapel and into the white light, and oh, also, we don't get you know, Freddy's mama, Amanda Krueger, never shows back up for this one.
No, she comes back in the next one.
Yeah, but that was something where
Lieutenant Dan survives, and we get the hook at the end of it when Alice and Dan are walking around the fountain, and apparently they're a thing now. At the beginning of the movie, he didn't know who she was, and then somehow throughout, they just are suddenly a couple at the end of it.
Yeah.
It's just like, I can see how that would be a thing if they put a little bit more effort into developing the relationship, but they did not.
Yeah.
They established that Alice kind of had a crush on him, because Dan, handsome Dan, but then they have like a couple of interactions throughout the movie, but you never really see a friendship form, and then by the end of it they're holding hands and walking around the fountain. It's so forced.
Yeah. And
like, where'd this relationship fucking come from?
I think one of my favorite parts about that whole thing is, like, right when the movie ends, like, so they throw the coin into the, you know, wishing well and like, or into the little
fountain,
and she sees a reflection of Freddy, and say, okay, well, it does that whole horror movie winky, like, oh, is he actually gone? That whole bit.
Oh, for sure.
But the end movie music is like,
yeah, what the fuck? It's like, is this pop song?
It's a pop song. It's like, it's, you know, about like touching people, and it's just like, it makes no sense for the movie at all. It's like, it's sexy time music. It's like, oh, why don't you just put fucking Prince in there, for fuck's sake, if you're gonna go that route. It's like, you know, but it was just hilarious that they always put, they do that shit in 80s movies.
Oh yeah.
But like the thing with like Dan and Alice, where one scene that I did really enjoy is when Alice kind of recruits Dan to help her, and they're trying to
oh, the loop.
Yeah, and they're doing the loop, and they just kind of keep going back and forth. I was like, okay, so that means that both of them are somehow asleep, and they're trying, and like Freddy knows that they're trying to get to her, you know, before he does the cockroach thing, and it's just like, and he's stalling them. First off, I was like, what? Freddy's never done anything like that. If that was the case, he would have done that with Nancy in Dream Warriors.
Yeah.
He would have done, like, he would have, after he saw Nancy the first time with Kristen, he would have, every time, like, he did some type of dream thing, he would have done some type of stall tactic.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, but again, the stall tactic was kind of fun just because it was there. And then when Freddy shows up in the middle of the road and then they smash into him, that was a pretty epic, like, car crash. So, I thought that was kind of neat. However, for Dan to be that banged up and Alice to be completely, like, A-okay to, like, go back to her house and do, you know, pretty cool montage stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, ah, okay. But, so, yeah. But that was, it was a film. It most certainly was a film.
It was a movie. And we watched it.
You could eat popcorn to it and sit down and watch
it. It killed about an hour and a half. It was a way to waste roughly 90 minutes of your life because it was a movie.
It was there.
That someone spent money on.
Yeah. A lot of people.
It was a movie.
It did. highest grossing for a nightmare.
Well, there's a reason why subsequent ones started to tip the other way, because this movie came out and people went, huh, we've jumped the shark.
Damn you, Bob Shay.
So, right. Dare I ask what your skull rating is?
All right. Oh, so you want me to jump in on this one? I'm going to give this one a 2.5.
Mm.
I do not really enjoy this one, and hilariously, I, when we were getting back into the podcast and we were kind of going back into just our ideas for like what movies we want to kind of jump back into. I remember watching Dream Warriors and I was like, oh, you know what? Like, I don't remember Dream Master being that bad. I was wrong.
sat there in your wrongness and was,
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah. And like, I just had to laugh at myself because I was like, God, like, I was like, I had a phantom moment. I was just like, where I, as,
oh,
a,
I know.
As
I hear
kid,
you.
As a kid, I was like, Phantom was actually pretty good. You know, the purple superhero in the jungle. Like
Billy Zane.
Billy Zane. I was just like, I remember that movie being good. And then I rewatched it and I'm like, this is dog shit. What was I thinking as a child? It's like, and it was like, but same thing like this, where it's just, I think I like it because of Freddy. I mean, even like the Freddy where he's at the beach and it's like a completely different.
Puts the Ray-Bans on.
Yeah, and he just puts the sunglasses. Like, that was, I actually enjoy that because it's not, even though it's goofy Freddy, it puts Freddy in a different kind of situation where it's, it works, but it's just like, it's, for this one, it's just too goofy. For me, Dream Warriors is like my end-all be-all. The way that I see Freddy being creepy, even though he had one-liners, they weren't weird, like, over-the-top goofiness.
Yep.
And, yeah, so, but that,
I,
yeah, 2.5.
For sure.
Yeah, but special effects, though, the cockroach thing, like that was that's probably one of my favorite kills in Nightmare.
Like the whole series?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like top five for sure, like yeah. out of them. So I mean, like they did, I could see what they were doing, but like shit, like where they were like the funhouse thing with Dan and Alice, and like it's like why? It's like you could do something better. It's
So for me, this movie's just a solid two.
Ooh yeah.
I actually, once upon a time when I was first getting into the series, I really loved this one. I liked this one quite a lot. I thought it was fun. And then I realized as my tastes started to change, because I think I was like 18 or 19 the first time I saw this movie, but as I got older my taste started to change and I started to expand my horizons on the type of horror movies that I did like, I started liking this one a little bit less. And then when I realized that I liked my horror antagonists scary, I started to realize I didn't like Freddy quite as much, because this series just, it was just a mess. Most of the movies aren't very good. They're not very well written. They're barely coherent at best for a lot of them. Yes, the special effects in this movie, there's a lot going for them. They are really well done. They're super fantastic. I'm not going to turn my nose up at watching this one again. But it's not one that if I sat there and went, I want to watch a Nightmare on Elm Street movie, that's the one I'm gonna grab. I also am trying to figure out why there was this sudden focus on Nancy's house. Like, why are we focusing on the fucking house?
Every time, like when he pushes Kristen into the sand and does that cool, like...
She's back at the fucking house.
Yeah, she puts it in the house, and I'm like... God, like
it made sense in part. It made sense in part three because we're bringing Nancy back, right? But like after that, there's this huge focus put on the house. Fucking why? Yeah.
And they always make they started making the house like just dilapidated. It was just like unlivable, and I'm like, I don't feel like a house like that would be.
I mean, I get the reasons why it's run down. It's in a dream, and it's supposed to kind of. Well, no,
Alice and the group went to the house during the daytime.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Like, they went, like, so the house is standing, and it looks exactly like that. So, I mean, it was just a weird thing where it's like, I don't feel like it would just be that bad in shape, like...
I don't know, man. Like, I just, maybe because of reputation, it fell into disrepair because nobody wanted to buy it because people had been murdered in that house. That's a thing. But the whole thing, why are we focusing on the fucking house? He was murdered in a boiler room.
Yeah, he should have did the thing with Kristen where he pushes her through the sand and she falls into the boiler room. Like, that would have been a better transition because she went from the house into the boiler room where...
It's just dumb.
Yeah.
It's just fucking dumb. I do like Alice. I think in terms of being a final girl, she's one of the better ones. She's no Sydney Prescott, but she manages... fairly well. She's more interesting. I think she's more interesting than some of the Friday the 13th final girls. I think Lisa Wilcox in that first role, her first time out, was a little bit more watchable than maybe Heather Langenkamp even in that first movie. By the time we got to Dream Warriors, Heather Langenkamp was a much better actress. So, like, I'm just comparing their... Because they both... Both Heather Langenkamp and Lisa Wilcox were in multiple movies. So you could kind of compare their first foray into the series versus their subsequent forays into the series. But
For me, it's like with when you if you had to compare like Nancy to Alice, I'd probably go with Nancy. Even in the
overall,
first movie.
Overall, I would go with Nancy. I'm just saying in terms of acting...
Oh yeah!
In their first films, I think Lisa Wilcox was a better actress. In the movie than maybe Heather Langenkamp was. I just overall, I don't like it. It doesn't hang together very well. It was clearly not. Even if you didn't know any of the behind the scenes shit that was going on, you still could tell this thing was a disorganized mess.
You want to know what I think of this movie? I know I just gave my skull rating, but I have a perfect like explanation or comparison to this. So every Thanksgiving, my stepmom, she makes Brussels sprouts.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
They're not bad. She makes them pretty good. I hate Brussels sprouts. I never really want to eat them. I never want to buy them and never want to make them myself.
Really? Because Michelle makes some bomb Brussels sprouts.
She makes some bomb Brussels sprouts, right? This movie is my bomb Brussels sprouts. I love me some Freddy. I'll watch a Freddy movie any fucking time. I don't like this one. It's just like, this is my Brussels sprouts. It's just like, yeah, I'll eat them. I'll stomach it. It'll be fine. It'll be good.
But if you had the option, it would be a no.
Yeah, I'm going for the mac and cheese all day long. Dream Warriors is my mac and cheese.
This is your Brussels sprouts.
This is my Brussels sprouts.
All right. Coolness. I don't think I have anything else to say.
No, I'm good to go. Let's wrap this home.
It's take it or leave it on this one. Yeah. There's better options, but this is definitely... It's not the bottom of the list. Freddy's dead. Yeah. But it's not... I would say it's probably the bottom half of the series for me.
It's one of those... I remember going to Spooky Empire here in Orlando, and there was I think there one of the years that we went, they did kind of a Q&A with the cast, and I remember that, like, there's a lot of people that do love this film, so it's one of those, like, I think it, even though it's not good, it still kind of holds a place in the Freddy.
It's, yeah, no, there's definitely, you know, a place for it, and like I said, it's not the worst one of the bunch. It's definitely in the bottom half of the series for me, but it's still much more watchable than, say, Freddy's Dead, because
woof.
All right, I have a question for you though. Before we wrap this up, do you want to? Because we've already watched and reviewed Nightmare 1, 2, Freddy's Dead, and Freddy vs. Jason, right? Do you want to maybe, once we get to the end of each franchise, do you want to do, like, sort of a wrap-up ranking episode as a bonus episode?
I think that'd be cool.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay,
that would work. And, I mean, if you guys want to, you know, our listeners want to hear that too, like, you know, let us know. Like, go on Instagram and, you know, chime away saying, yeah, good idea there, guys.
Because it would be a fun project, yeah. I think. I just...
Even if it's just, like, a bonus, like a quick, you know, to kind of go through and, like,
just give some... wrap up the thing.
Yeah, I mean, just like what we did with Halloween. I mean, we didn't go through each Halloween movie. I mean, we kind of stepped on them, but we didn't, like, go through, like, what we do with, you know, each show type of thing. Yeah, so,
okay, cool. So we'll
I think that'd be good.
Yeah, and that'll kind of refresh for the ones that we've already done. So if you haven't already, our very first episode of the show was A Nightmare on Elm Street. We have done Nightmare on Elm Street one, prior to picking the series back up. We had already done parts 1, 2, Freddy's Dead, and Freddy vs. Jason already. So if you want to go back through our catalog and listen to those and hear our thoughts on those, you're more than welcome to do that. If I remember to, I'll put the links in the description of the podcast. Fingers crossed I remember. If I don't write it down... It's a toss up.
There was that one time where it's like, because I'll do all the editing and I post the episodes, but then you go in because you're a better talker and writer than I am. So it's like you'll go in and do all the stuff. But there was like, and I'll always I always put in like some little funny comment for her to delete and then put in her description. And I did like, it was like fart poop duty, and it's just, it's still there to this day. Like,
it was from January 2021.
and it's a pretty well listened to episode.
So. Apparently nobody's noticed because nobody has felt the need to let us know that I missed one.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Slacker.
Join us on social media on Facebook and Instagram at Creepin' It Real. Make sure you subscribe so we drop into your favorite podcatcher every Tuesday. We're available pretty much everywhere at this point. Thank you, Anchor, for blasting us all over the place.
Yeah.
Buy our merch. It would be greatly appreciated if you repped us outside of the podcast sphere. Creepitreal.rebel.com or click the link in the Instagram bio to get some super sweet merch. All of our designs are done by Lunchbox.
Yeah.
So they are very unique and very special to us as a podcast. And then join us next week as we cover A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 5, The Dream Child. And until then, I have been Mr. Smeg.
I have been the good buddy Lunchbox.
Sweet dreams, everybody.